The Tom Woods Show, episode 2271.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, all you old timers out there from the Ron Paul 2008 campaign, you may remember my friend Larry Lepard, who spent $200,000 of his own money on full-page newspaper ads in support of Dr. Paul. Well, Larry has had an uncanny way with money over the years, and he made a presentation to my paid membership on how to insure yourself against currency debasement, that is to say, how to survive inflation. Well, I took that presentation out from behind the paywall, and I'm making it available to the general public for free. Check it out at tomwoods.com/Larry. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. Connor Boyack is back with us. Connor Boyack is one of these people. He's like, I'm trying to think of people with big, long bios I have to go through every time they come on because they've done so many things. But boy, has Connor done a lot of things. You probably know him for the Tuttle Twins children's book series, which has just exploded. And it went from being one little book to being practically an empire all over the place with numerous volumes and workbooks and all kinds of great educational material. But of course, Connor is the author of numerous other books outside the Tuttle Twins series. He runs the Libertas Institute, a liberty think tank. And he's just all around an extremely impressive guy. In fact, so impressive that I tried to get him on today to talk about his new book, Children of the Collective. But it is selling so well that the book is temporarily unavailable on Amazon. There's a delay. I mean, you can get it, but it won't be in your mailbox right away. And so we've had to scramble to talk about something else instead. I mean, the guy is doing well. So Connor, welcome to the show.
You flatter me as always. Thanks, Tom. It's great to have the problem of going out of stock on Amazon. So now we're scrambling to keep up, which is sad for me because I've been working on that book for, 3 years. And it's just so well timed for what's going on right now. And so to have it be unavailable for a couple of weeks, I'm like, come on, Bezos, get your act together.
I remember all the way back in 2004, December, The Politically Incorrect Guide to American History came out, and it was selling so ridiculously that Amazon was saying something like, usually ships in 6 days, then 10 days, then 12 days, or then it was usually ships in 4 to 6 weeks. 4 to 6 weeks? That's death. I mean, no one's going to buy it if it's 4 to 6 weeks. So I'm going berserk, and the publisher's saying, yes, okay, yeah, it is a problem, but this is still really exciting that it's doing that well. So that is indeed the silver lining to it. So we'll get you back on because that really is an important book and we definitely do want to talk about it. But let's start off. I have a few things that I want to cover with you. And one of them has to do with something you talked about in my School of Life program to my members there, because we do have some successful libertarians. I had Eric July talk to my School of Life people. This is the website, tomschooloflife.com. Reopens in a couple of weeks. I'm talking to you January. When this comes out, it'll be January 23rd or 4th. I can't remember. But in a couple of weeks, we're going to reopen that. I had Eric July on because he had an amazing success with his Ripaverse comics. I mean, he opened his own comic book company surrounded by naysayers and yet pulled in over $3.5 million right off the bat with his initial campaign. It was unbelievable. Well, likewise, Connor, you went from, I mean, really the lowest position imaginable, being the tech guy for Tom Woods, right? The lowest basement level. And then now you have a veritable empire, it seems to me. So first of all, let's talk about that Tuttle Twins children book series. Obviously, it's not hard to figure out how you came up with the idea. We're all getting asked, what can my 8-year-old read that'll spark his interest or get him thinking about interesting and important things? And the answer was nothing. We have absolutely nothing. But how did you go from, gee, this would be a good idea, to actually doing it, getting it illustrated, getting it published, getting inventory, selling, like all these steps, getting the word out about it? How do you go from idea to execution?
Well, I had no idea. I mean, I had never done anything like that before. So it was a lot of Googling, a lot of reading blog posts and so forth from other people who were sharing tips. One decision, though, I credit with being the most significant reason behind why we have been able to sell as many books as we have, why we've been able to grow this so much. And that is, speaking of my earlier book, we just discussed Children of the Collective and the problems on Amazon we're having. With Tuttle Twins, we intentionally did not list the books on Amazon. for years, we did not want to do Amazon. We wanted to do direct to consumer. We wanted to be the ones to advertise. We wanted people to buy on our website. We wanted to be the ones to ship it to them, all because, well, two reasons. First is I wanted to know who my customers were, right? If you sell on Amazon, I have no clue who's buying the book. I have no way to market to them. That's Amazon's customer, not mine. And so when we kind of had the early inkling that, you know, hey, this may become a series, we may want to do more books, I was like, well, I want to know everyone who bought the first book so I could tell them about the second book and so on. And so that was a critical thing. The other reason was we wanted to capture as much of the revenue as possible in the transactions so that we can reinvest it into marketing. When you go through, as you know, a traditional publisher, the standard market rate is about $1 a book for a royalty, depending on volume of copies that you sell. But the publisher has a ton of other expenses. And so the author profits relatively little compared to how much money the books are selling. And so knowing that we were doing these less expensive kids books, $9.99 a piece, we're like, hey, we got to capture as much of the revenue as possible so that we have a marketing budget. And so by doing the sales ourselves, we were able to do that. Now, in the early days of Tuttle Twins, it was literally me coming home from work from Libertas Institute. I'd drive home from the office, you know, say hi to the kids, do dinner, et cetera. And then I would sit there for an hour or two or whatever and pack up books. And the next morning on the way into work, I would drop them all off at the post office. I would go to work, come home, pack books. Eventually started to involve my kids helping a little bit, but it was just me in my home fulfilling books. Now that grew to where I had to hire someone part-time, then full-time. Now, Tom, we have a massive warehouse where I employ like 30 teenagers who just spend all day slinging books. But we've been able to internalize that, which allows us to capture the revenue. And last year we spent millions of dollars in marketing. And that's why we've been able to grow, is because we decided to kind of take this on ourselves. It's not for everyone. Most authors just want to be an author. They don't want to also be a publisher and a marketer and a distributor and everything else. It is a lot of work, but the benefits have clear upside. And it's really the reason why we've been able to grow as we have.
I don't know that I would have been sure that that strategy, which has many advantages, would nevertheless work. Because of course, one of the benefits of Amazon is the recognition. I mean, people, well, you know, whether you like the leadership of the company is irrelevant. You know that if you order a product from it, it's going to arrive. You've already got your credit card information in there. You just click and you buy. Whereas some new website, you got to pull your credit card out and sit there and fill out all the information. And, you know, that might not seem like a big deal, but that's a marginal difference that will drive some people away. And, you know, they can, Amazon's got the Prime program, so they'll ship people the stuff for free. And it's not always easy to duplicate that when you're just your own thing. But apparently that seems to be, at least in your case, outweighed by how much more of the revenue you keep. And the crucial fact that you get the contact information of the buyers, which you don't get when you sell on Amazon.
It was outweighed for us, Tom, as you just mentioned. But we, in order to do that, we had to outweigh things for the customer. In other words, to get over the very barriers that you mentioned, the fact that they have to take out their credit card, the fact that like, hey, can I trust this TuttleTwins.com website, right? We had to overwhelm them with value in order to compel them to make that transaction on our website. And so when you would come to our website in the early days, and even still today, it's, hey, you can get this whole bundle of books cheaper than you can get in on Amazon. And by the way, we're going to give you free activity workbooks, which you're not going to get on Amazon. And so basically trying to really say, this is where you can find value. Yeah, we don't do free shipping. You're going to pay a couple bucks in shipping, but it's still going to be cheaper overall than Amazon. Yeah, we're going to take a few more days to get you the books than Amazon will, but you're going to get all these free workbooks instead. So from a business standpoint, we knew that we had to give the customer compelling reasons to buy from us. Now, the other benefit is that when people click an ad or they hear about the books from a friend and they come to our website, we have a bunch of marketing copy, as do you on your, you know, School of Life and Liberty Classroom and others. We can spend a few minutes with that customer educating them on why this is so important. If they're on Amazon, not only do you get a tiny little description or something very meager, but they're bombarded with distractions of competing products. Right? Hey, customers who like this also want this, or hey, here's a sponsored item and tons of distractions. Far better to invite people to come to our website where we have a captive audience. We can take our time to really kind of walk them through the benefits, overwhelm them with value, and then get them to purchase and then build that customer relationship. So there are trade-offs, as you point out. This is not for everyone. But I think, you know, I probably talk to an author a week on average who wants to pick my brain. How have you done this, et cetera? And I say, like, look, if you want to be a successful author, unless you can get on like Oprah or, you know, you have a super big following, you need a marketing budget, which means you need to probably get into direct sales so that you can capture that revenue and have the list and grow it over time. And the sad thing is, I think 95% of the people I talk to don't do that. And I get it, right? They just want to write the book and move on to their next project. But it is kind of the secret sauce behind what we've been able to do.
Well, I noticed that from time to time, when you have a sale, you'll do a sale on bundles. You know, you get this bundle of books, and then with this bundle of books, we're going to send you all the workbooks. We'll send you all these other additional materials, some of them digital, so as to make the purchase irresistible. I mean, you've done an incredible job. I know that because I promote your stuff as an affiliate. And when you have a sale, it's just unbelievable. People just buy like crazy. You've somehow made this an irresistible purchase. What do you attribute, though? I mean, yes, obviously there was a need that you're filling, but what do you attribute your success to in terms of just the sheer number of buyers? I mean, yes, it's true that you do some advertising, but I suppose before you did advertising, you probably did just organic traffic. How did you get eyeballs on the offer?
Well, word of mouth has been very important, but you know, it's like a musician who's on the side of the road and they have their case open with they plant some money in there to give you the social proof that, oh, hey, other people have chipped in some money, so you should too. And so we knew that in the early days, we needed to kind of get these books out there as much as possible so that people would start talking about them. So we did a lot of conferences, we would have booths, we did a lot of kind of email advertising, went on podcasts like yours, really just trying to get people aware. And now it is, in marketing, it's like you have to touch someone 7 or 8 or 10 or 20 times now to get them to finally take action. And so the thing about the sales is that these people have heard about the Tuttle Twins a dozen times, right? The neighbor down the road recommended them. The person at their kid's Bible school said you should get them. They saw a Facebook ad. They watched a cartoon episode. But then finally they come across a sale and that impels them to action because there's high urgency, right? It's a compelling offer and it's very urgent. And so those sales are really effective at getting the fence sitters to take action. People who are like, oh yeah, I've meant to look into those books or I've heard a lot about them. And so the sales are a way to kind of like grab them by the shoulders and say, okay, now's your time to take action. The other thing that works really well for that is when we're attacked, right? When CNN came after us and said that we were building this quote, right-wing children's education complex. We sold over 100,000 books as a directly attributable to the CNN promotion. We launched a coupon code, CNN, get 50% off.
Yeah, it's almost like you wrote the CNN story yourself. It was perfect.
Exactly.
Absolutely perfect. Yeah, I love seeing you do that. Monetize your haters. That is it.
I said to my friends, does anyone have any contacts at MSNBC so they can, you know, pile on? But
I know. I have a friend, I'm not sure he would want me to say his name because he actually had his feelings very seriously hurt by it. But if you remember Keith Olbermann on MSNBC, he used to have a segment called The Worst Person in the World. And one day, this particular person, friend of mine, I'll tell you off the air who it is, was chosen the worst person in the world. And it was really crushing to him. He really, really hated that. He's prepared to be disliked, but he doesn't crave being disliked. Mm-hmm. And whereas I thought, if I were the worst person in the world on MSNBC, could you imagine the street cred I'd have? You know, what I could parlay out of that? It just seems like I would welcome it, but fair enough. I wasn't exactly in his shoes.
I have a related goal, Tom, along these lines. My goal, I aspire to be included on the Southern Poverty Law Center's list of a hate watch.
Yeah, see, not everyone can achieve that one, but if you do, I know. I'm trying. So anyway, so this is all a really, really great, I think, lesson for a lot of people, whether libertarian or not. Frankly, and how to be successful. The fact that you took that CNN thing and you turned it around on them as a way of drawing people to you, well, that was great. And when I saw that, I thought, I sure hope he does. Because occasionally I write something defending you guys against crazy accusations. But as you say, what are you being accused of? I mean, basically, you're being accused of wanting equal time. Right. That's all you want. You know, one of the best things Rush Limbaugh ever said was, they used to say, Rush, why don't you give the other side equal time? And his answer was, I am equal time. Well, the Tuttle Twins is just equal time.
Yeah, people often will say, critics will often say, oh, you're, you know, propagandizing kids and you shouldn't be teaching kids this stuff. And I said, I'll stop as soon as they stop. The other side is like the critical failure of our movement, if you want to call it a movement, libertarians, conservatives, freedom lovers, and so forth. The critical oversight is that for decades, we have allowed our ideological opponents to raise our children, to educate them during their most intellectually formative years. And then only when they become adults do we as civic groups, think tanks, voter drives, nonprofits, educating people and so forth. Only then, once they're adults, do we go out and do outreach and talk to them and try and encourage them to believe our ideas. And by then, so much of the kind of worldview has already been deeply planted. It's not irreversible. Clearly, people can change and many do. But I feel like we have been playing defense for decades. I'm sick of playing defense. I want to play offense. And so that's what the Tuttle Twins allows us to do.
Yeah, exactly right. And by the way, I can understand. I think it's understandable that a parent might feel a bit of a sting when being accused of ideologically brainwashing his kids. I hear that. But the way I look at it is this. Every parent teaches a child right and wrong. Everybody's teaching the child right from wrong. When you see your child hit the neighbor's kid unprovoked, then you say, hey, you shouldn't have done that because that was wrong. You know, I mean, or whatever it is. The kid is being nasty to somebody for no reason. You say, hey, you shouldn't do that. Well, this is just a subset of that because I want to raise my kid. Now, I don't sit down and have ideological sessions with my kids, but they just observe it in how I act. They occasionally read what I write or they hear what I'm saying. But I want to have some influence over how they think it's appropriate to act toward other people. And that is going to have a political dimension. There's no getting
around
it.
As well, you should. We don't question this in a religious context. Clearly, like few people would argue, Tom, that you shouldn't have the right or even shouldn't take the initiative to take your children to church, take them to, you know, Sunday school or whatever, right? We have this kind of commonly accepted societal standard that it's reasonable and makes sense that parents would pass on their religious values and share those and teach them to their children. Well, if we believe that there exist certain economic and political truths, if we believe that these are how the world works, if we believe that these are the values that kind of move humanity forward, I would be derelict in my duty as a father to not pass those truths as I understand them onto my children, just as I do in a religious context. So I fail to understand why we as society kind of bless this kind of religious transmission of ideas, but the political and economic is written off as this pejorative propaganda or whatever. Like, I get it. You can go overboard. You can do stupid things. But at kind of its foundational level, I think my job as a father is to be a truth teller to my children and help them understand how the world works. And so I see no reason not to be teaching them the ideas that I believe to be true.
Hey, folks, quick sponsor message. If you're like me, you feel like no sooner have you completed one meal when somehow already it's time to prepare the next one. Well, what if you had a nice big bundle of juicy, tender, and flavorful Omaha steaks at the ready? My family's been ordering from Omaha Steaks since probably around the time of the first Ron Paul presidential campaign. Super convenient, great value, and absolutely delicious. They have everything from perfectly aged, tender steaks to juicy burgers, decadent desserts, classic comfort meals, everything you need for a romantic Valentine's Day dinner, for a whole bunch of people coming over to watch a game, or even just for a regular weekday night. Every time you order from Omaha Steaks, you are getting five generations of family-owned expertise. Not to mention, steak is fast becoming the most politically incorrect meal there is, so that's all the more reason to stock up on Omaha Steaks. Plus, with this special offer, visit omahasteaks.com and enter Woods at checkout to get $30 off your order. So do what the Woodses do. Stock up on Omaha Steaks. Go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code Woods at checkout to get an extra $30 off your order. You're already saving up to 55% on select Omaha Steaks customer favorites, but now you can save an extra $30 off your order when you go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code Woods at checkout. Minimum order may be required. My kids were all too young during the Ron Paul presidential campaigns to really be aware of what was going on. Now, I suppose my eldest now, who this year will turn 20, she was rather precocious, but you know, she didn't know a lot about him, but she knew enough to know he was a decent guy who believed in honorable things. And as a matter of fact, I remember we sent her to a quite good private school at the time. And they were having some kind of like classroom election thing. And she came home and said, well, I want to vote for Ron Paul, but I, you know, I know this will be kind of odd to the rest of the students. So we talked that through. I thought that's very sweet. And I remember the time also, she was a little kid. We were over at Ron Paul's house and she swam in his pool. And on the way back to the car, she was reflecting on the significance of the pool she had just swum in. And I thought, that's my kid. She gets the significance of it. But so even though, so because they were so young, I have since then sometimes shown them video clips of the crazy things we used to do when we were in that campaign. And the, you know, when there was a thing in 2008 where you're supposed to put Ron Paul signs up all over your neighborhood under cover of night. And then the next morning there's signs saying Google Ron Paul and all that. And so we made video clips of us doing this. And I've shown this to my kids to say, this is what matters to your father. This is what motivates him. And I want them to know about a really, really admirable man. So there's nothing abnormal about that. We all have people we admire and we all have things we believe in. And I am not going to pretend to my kids that I am indifferent between a range of options on these things.
Well, it's very interesting you say that. There was a poll that just came out, I believe about a week ago. It was conducted a few months ago here in America, 1,000 plus respondents. And the entire purpose of the poll was to get parents to or adults to rank why K through 12 education exists. Why do we educate kids? What are the priorities? And the respondents were given 57 priorities, you know, to prepare them for college and to prepare them for a job and to have a meaningful life and, you know, all these different things. And they had to rank them all. So when all was said and done, critical thinking was number one. I was blown away. The top priority expressed by the public is that they want children to develop critical thinking. What was very interesting, though, as kind of a related note, people in this poll were also asked how they perceive society prioritizes these various things. So for example, the college preparedness, which is so much bandied about as to why, you know, we have taxpayers invest in K to 12 schools. We got to prepare them for college and then a career. College was ranked out of 57. It was ranked number 47 by the individuals themselves as to their priority for their children to receive an education. Yet when these same individuals were asked, well, how do you perceive that other people evaluate these priorities or how they rank them for college? Instead of number 47 on the list, it was number 3. In other words, there's this huge difference between what people actually prioritize for their children versus what they assume everyone else prioritizes. So we're in this weird system where everyone's kind of just going along with the motions and assuming that the way we do things is the way everyone wants them done, while privately we're thinking, this is not serving my kids. The average public school is doing a piss poor job at helping children develop critical thinking. Instead, it's all compulsory education, pump and dump, you know, learn this the same time, the same way as everyone else. And so to me, that's a very interesting with you talking about your kids or me thinking about mine is that we have to, I think, question, is the status quo okay? Even if we're homeschooling, so many homeschoolers will just use a lot of the curriculum materials that the public schools use, or they'll teach in the same kind of compulsory way and have all these like tests and standards and worksheets. And so I think it's healthy for us to reflect a little bit and say, okay, what are our priorities? If I want to raise my children to be critical thinkers, to be well-rounded, to understand history, or even things like, you know, the Ron Paul campaign and why we did what we did and what those values we were expressing were, right? We have to question, like, are the schools that our children are attending, whatever kind they are, public, private, charter, or home, are we doing an adequate job there for our children? My whole goal with the Tuttle twins, like if I were to peel back the layers and say, why are we doing all this? It's that I want family discussion around the dinner table. I don't think we save our country at the Capitol or at the courtroom, right? Even though I'm involved in all those things. I run a think tank, we sue the government too, and all the rest, right? Like they're important, we ought to do them, they have their place. But I don't think that's how we save our country. I think we save our country around the dinner table. And I think we've lost that as a culture of this kind of family integrity and civil debate between family members, let alone neighbors and community members and more broadly with the public. And so my goal with the Tuttle Twins, people would always say, you should be going into the schools. This should be going after the teachers. And we have and we do, but that's a very minor portion because when I go to the schools and we get teachers teaching various Tuttle Twins type activities and lessons, the kids go home and mom says, what did you learn today? And the kid's like, oh, I don't know. And there's no retention. There's no application because mom has no clue what the kid learned in the class if the kid even absorbed any of it. But when we go after the home, when we get parents to be the customers and buy these books for their kids or watch the Tuttle Twins cartoon with their kids. Mom and dad and siblings all are on the same page. And they can talk about them. We give them discussion questions at the end of our books and in other materials to say, here are things that you can talk about. That fundamentally to me is the goal. These are ideas that matter. These are worth discussing. They're very relevant to what's going on in our world today. Hey, parents, here's a very simple, relatable way where you can now talk about these ideas with your children and help them better understand how the world actually works rather than this fake cocoon that they're being exposed to via social media. So that's the whole goal. Family discussion. Let's understand these ideas. Let's debate these ideas. And that's really why we're trying to do what we do.
Let's take the last few minutes to talk about something else you've been doing for, let's say, the children's market, and that is entrepreneurship. Like, we all know the stories of kids with lemonade stands and the authorities come shut them down. And it's everybody admits that's ridiculous, pretty much everybody. And so you've done something in Utah and then aiming to bring this to other states to stop that craziness and also to encourage entrepreneurship in kids and just keep the state away.
Yeah. Yeah. We saw those headlines, and about 6 years ago, it was particularly bad. There were a lot of cases in 1 year. So we went to our legislature. We said, hey guys, let's get ahead of this. Let's not let this happen anymore in our state. We got them to pass a law that says if you are under 18, you do not need to obtain any kind of business license, any kind of permit, no food handler's permit. You don't have to collect and remit sales tax. There are literally no restrictions or permission slips of any kind if you are a minor. We have an actual free market for minors. Now, of course, the crushing weight of the state will come upon them the moment that they turn 18, but that's another battle for another day. Our point was, let's at least encourage youth entrepreneurship and not make a girl who's selling 50-cent cups of lemonade get an $85 permit. That's stupid. And so we got the law changed. And to celebrate that, we launched a program called the Children's Entrepreneur Market. So for 5 or 6 years, we've been doing this in Utah now. They're kind of like farmers markets, 3 hours on a Saturday morning, you know, at the city park or outside Costco or whatever. And all the booths are there. Mom and dad will help set up, but the kids run the whole show. They're the ones pitching the customers walking by. They're the ones haggling. They're the ones selling what they're doing. And it's awesome because your typical lemonade stand, 90% of the kids' time is spent trying to flag down vehicles to stop. With our markets, we get like 1,000+ people in the public coming out. So there's constant foot traffic. And they're right next to all the other kids selling all kinds of stuff. It's food, it's t-shirts, it's trinkets, toys, slime. I remember a few years ago when fidget spinners were a craze. I think we had like 15 booths that all were selling fidget spinners. So it's just fun to see these kids practicing entrepreneurship. So we give them Tuttle Twins books and we're developing a curriculum to teach kind of applied entrepreneurship, because the goal is not just to get them all to go be entrepreneurs necessarily, it's to get them all to think like entrepreneurs, to understand the power of problem solving, to actually try and create value for others. And it's these lessons, I think, that can undermine a lot of the socialist woke crap that they're being subjected to in our world today. And so we are now taking this on the road. We've been doing it for a few years in Utah. Next year, we're going to expand to 5 new states. Oh gosh, I think Arizona, Colorado, Texas, Tennessee, and I don't remember the other one. But the goal is within 5 years, we want to have this be a fully national program. We want millions of kids involved in this thing. We want to partner with communities and schools and really grow this as a brand. It's going to be under the Tuttle Twins branch of what we do. So it'll be Tuttle Twins introduces the children's entrepreneur market, so that as kids participate in the market, they can then go read the books and watch the cartoon and continue to learn. And we're super excited. Now, not every state has laws like we do. So we're actually going to be doing a little bit of intentional civil disobedience to say, we're not getting business license. We're not doing permits. We're not doing any of that. And if anyone wants to come after these markets, come after these kids, we will then be prepared to go work with the local think tank and legislators to get the law changed once we can identify, here's a very, look how stupid this story is that just came out. Let's pass a law like Utah's. We've helped a few other states pass a similar law. So there's now 4 or 5 states that have some decent laws on the books like Utah does. But to me, it's a fun project. It's great to reach out to the rising generation. Parents love it because you're helping their kids. And so they become endeared to you. We used to be dismissed, Tom, as the fringe libertarian group here in Utah and elsewhere. That branding has totally shifted. When we started doing Tuttle Twins and the Children's Entrepreneur Market, we have such a positive brand in our community now. No one sees us as fringe. No one sees us as extreme. No one even calls us libertarian. It's just like free market or things like this, very kind of endearing terms. Parents love us. They're so appreciative that we're helping them help their kids. To me, there's a lot of lessons in there in terms of libertarian advocacy or even marketing, that how you position yourself matters significantly. And it's allowed us to push a lot of our policies forward, because that perception about who we are and why we do what we do has totally changed. So I could say a lot more, but it's an exciting project. And in the next few years, we hope to take it nationwide. So the website, for those interested, it's a mouthful. It's childrensentrepreneurmarket.com.
You were doing so well to get to that 500 character domain name. childrensentrepreneurmarket.com. All right, I'm going to put that, and of course, TuttleTwins.com. I'll put that up, both of those up at tomwoods.com/2271. And we will, we hope, within the next few weeks, get you back on and talk about your book. When we include all the Tuttle Twins books, I just need to know, because I have Germinal Van come on a lot, and he's younger than, how old are you? Can I ask you how old you are?
Yeah, I am 41.
Okay, he's like 32, and he's written like 850,000 books. So how many have you written?
Let's see, I now have 39. I'm doing 5 more this year. I have a goal of doing 100 books before I die. I'm going to try and write a 100.
I think that's doable.
I think it's doable. Yeah.
I've had a guest on who has written 100 books. That's Bob Bly. He's a business guy. He co-authors some of them. And they're not all as long as the New Testament or anything. But they're still, they are legitimate books, and he's written a whole bunch of them. I think you'll do it. I actually think you'll do it. That is tremendous. So good for you. I used to think back in, I guess I wrote, the last book I wrote came out in like 2014. Mm-hmm. And I, at that time, thought having 12 books was a pretty impressive thing. But okay, can't all be Connor Boyack. I'm at peace with that. It's okay. So TuttleTwins.com.
No, it is impressive. Your books have been very influential on me and many others. And so to me, it's whether it's one book or many more, I think everyone has a book in them. I wish more of us would be publishing our ideas and putting in the thought work to think, how can I create value? How can I make a difference? So as you know, Tom, but I'll say it again publicly, your books have been super influential for me, especially in the early years of Libertas, Nullification especially. So I appreciate your work very much.
Well, thank you very much. That's very gracious of you. So folks, head over to those links. I got them at tomwoods.com/2271. And can't wait to get you back on and talk about your book. Thanks, Connor.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, folks, that is another episode of the Tom Woods Show. I will see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.